secret. This was never about money for us. It was about us against the system. That system that kills the human spirit. We stand for something. To those dead souls inching along the freeways in their metal coffins, we show them that the human spirit is still alive. So you trust me?
We're gonna have to start the show on here. Welcome to a very special episode of Two Angry Guys. I'm John Eric.
I'm Brett Peters.
And joining us, our very special guest, man who's made his 15 minutes count lately, professional independent wrestler, Chris Dickinson, our good friend, going way back. The Dirty Daddy himself.
The Dirty Daddy has arrived. Two angry guys. No, tonight, it's three angry guys.
Well, it usually is three angry guys. It would have been four angry guys, but
somebody's not here. Somebody decided to no show again.
He's got
to
get his second workout in.
Yeah, he's got to get his pump.
He's getting ready for the summer.
Yeah, we are doing a show without Johnny Landon, who should be here but is not. Regardless, we've been wanting to get you on for a couple weeks now, even before everything happened. We discussed trying to get you in, and then you fucking blew up. You blew up the fucking internet, and no looking back since, huh?
I mean, yeah, it's interesting. It was definitely nothing intentional for me on my end. It was all just another day at the office, but sometimes you do things and people take notice. You know, it's always going to come down to that that one moment that could change a lot of things. And when you go about doing things in a certain way and you're always wondering and hoping that one day, you know, you're going to get the attention that you feel you deserve for being the kind of performer that you know you are, well, things happen. And, you know, then things change a little bit. But, you know, I'm right here. I'm still rocking and rolling. I'm loving it. I'm loving life right now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I guess let's start. We go way back.
Absolutely. 100%.
I mean, we're talking like fucking pretty much 14 years, 14, 15 years now, because yeah. I think we met in like, what, late 2000?
2001.
Yeah. So you were just, I mean, that was even before we, you know, we were just fucking kids fooling around in a fucking Jew park.
Yeah. I mean, we weren't fooling around. I mean, if anybody ever asks me about my my backyard wrestling, or because everybody backyard wrestled.
Yeah. I don't think it's anybody from our generation pretty much did.
I mean,
yeah.
And there's some people who don't, and there are some exceptions, but I mean, let's just say, come on. Most of us had some sort of unprofessional experience wrestling before we actually became wrestlers. I've actually recently, because I've become such good friends with some of the old you know, guys from back in the day. I hang out with Monster Mac a lot.
Oh God!
If you don't know who he is, he was one half of the Hit Squad. They were a real notorious, you know, indie wrestling tag team in the early 2000s, who really kind of took indie wrestling to a different place and kind of set it on its course to where it is now. They were a big part of that. And he was showing me, actually, and I wouldn't want Loki to hear this, but he's showing me like their old original backyard on train stuff, where they were actually wrestling in a ring, but they didn't really know how to work. And it was, I mean, I could just tell you right now, I mean, from that to what, you
what
know,
are,
I know
yeah.
I was doing at PIW, I mean, I was light years ahead of that even when I was a backyarder. But, you know, it's just funny to watch, to see, you know, other people's version of backyard wrestling. But if you remember how seriously I took it even then, it was intense.
Yeah, and it's funny because not that long ago, I found an old VHS and I started watching it.
Oh, I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
I know you got some things down here
I need
to get my hands on.
There is some footage.
Oh. You have a fucking Trevor Trove down
there's
here.
There's the one video where I take the shit in the middle of the park during a promo. That's right. That's art. That's art. Somebody, I told somebody about that in the business. I forgot who it was. They were like, man, that is dark art or something. They said some ridiculous thing.
I was talking to him about it the other day. I remember the first episode of PIW watched on SITV. It was the episode
where we used to have the show on community television.
Where you guys went to the house party and you were like peeing on the toothbrushes and everything like that. Just total.
I think the statute of limitations has run out on that, so we can discuss it.
We were assholes.
Yeah, I mean, we all had our fucking. I remember the tackling of the snowman.
Yeah,
and all that shit. We used to just fuck around so much back then. It was great.
Back, you know, we were just angry teenagers, outcasts brought together in a group of outcasts, and you know, there's always going to be people who are just. They want to go with the flow. Everybody wants to just be easy, do what everybody else does. We were the types of kids that just we weren't there for the party. We were there to crash the party.
Right, exactly. And that hasn't much changed in a lot of ways.
Oh no, I obviously not. If you really take a look at some of my recent engagements,
right,
nothing has changed.
Yeah. So I guess I want to just kind of tackle this step by step. So we started because we went to what was it, the BWO school in what, 02? Was that 02?
I started at the Jersey All Pro Wrestling School.
Even before
2001,
that. 2001,
yeah.
Before BWO. Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the Jersey All Pro Wrestling School was kind of on its last legs around the time I started training. And then Magic, who was the head trainer at the Jersey All Pro Wrestling School, kind of just moved the operations to BWO school. But that was kind of just it never really was BWO to me. I never really cared that it was BWO. I just cared that it was Magic. It was still the same faces, the same people, the same circle as the Jersey All Pro Wrestling School, you know.
Yeah, and then who else was there? Anyone else that came out of that whole group that was still Jersey? Was Jay Lethal part of that group at that point?
Jay Lethal,
yeah.
Jay Lethal, Azrael. But even though Azrael was kind of one of Homicide's kids from the kind of like the ending days of the Doghouse, but there's been a couple guys. Johnny Cockstrong.
That's right.
Johnny Cockstrong. You know, if you really go back and think about it. There's guys that have done things. There's guys that have done things. You could even say Damian Darling,
who's
guys that have done things from that whole little late circle 2002 summer training camp over at Garfield, New Jersey there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then, at the time you were, dude, there was a lot of, you've had a weird
Oh, Mongwe, Tyson.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Of course,
yeah,
Tyson, Jocka man, dude. What am I forgetting him? He's the best out of all of us. You should have seen the match he had last week at JCW.
Really?
I mean, dude, he's so unbelievable right now. And I'm not just saying that because he's my best friend. He wrestled this dude, Arcadia. It was like his first
match.
His first match back in 3 years, all right? First match back in 3 years. Tyson made the kid look like $1 million. I mean, Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Animal were watching the match popping for it. I was watching them over my shoulder. I was like, man, Tyson be going crazy right now. He was like an old school Memphis heel, but then he was busting out all the whole false finishes. I mean, he was making the kid look like $1 million. By the time he started hitting all his offense off, he was being such a good heel that anytime Arcadia got a little opening to hit some offense, the crowd went wild because, you know, Tyson, his pacing, the way he was controlling the match, it was beautiful. I was just sitting there saying to myself, damn, I'm so happy that dude is on my side. He's my best friend because he's such a good worker.
Yeah, when he first started out, he was doing the Johnny Fresh.
Oh, yeah.
And his whole gimmick was just dancing with throwing out gum.
He was just a smooth Puerto Rican dude.
Yeah, he got over in a fucking backyard by just throwing out free gum. It was like the simplest fucking thing.
Yeah.
It worked.
It's funny. It's like when we came into our own, and I remember in 2009 when I first started having like my little taste of breaking out on the indie scene and traveling and coming into my own and getting exposure. I remember when I came back to wrestling after like a couple years hiatus from, you know, graduating high school, going to college for a little bit, playing music. I said to myself, what do I really want to do? What is Chris Dickinson? Who do I want to be? And I said, well, what the hell was I doing when I was backyarding? What did I want to be then? I just wanted to beat the living piss out of everybody. I wanted to be the most intimidating, you know, just imposing character that could just completely take apart anybody at any moment at any time. And I said, well, I was only a 15-year-old kid doing it.
Yeah.
I said, what are the things I'm going to have to do in order to give myself the tools and become the necessary athlete in order to do that? So I started going to the gym. I started getting bigger. I started really just taking everything a lot more serious. And in 2015, here we are. I mean, I've got guys like the Necro Butcher and all these other guys who say, I'm the toughest guy that they've ever wrestled. I'm the scariest, most imposing character that they've ever worked with in wrestling. So many people are afraid to even step into the ring with me. I mean, I have workers who are worked into believing that the character is real to the point where they'll believe that a simple chair shot and a power bomb, you know, to a girl is 100% real because it must be. I mean, that was the most over thing in wrestling, you know, that people believed it was real at that moment in 2015, and we didn't need one drop of blood to get it over. You know, it's all about how you do things. It's not about the things you're actually doing. You know what I mean? You know what I'm talking about?
And it's just, well, like your road to where you are now is like very interesting because you took a break from wrestling for a long time. You stopped for what? A couple, like 3 or 4 years, right?
When I was 16, 17.
But that's when you were in, what was the name of the band that you were in?
I was in a few bands. A few bands.
I don't remember. But you took a break to, and you went into music, and you were like concentrating on being, in a band and, mm-hmm. and what you play in Germany and all that shit, right? And then you got back into it. Because for a while, you just were disinterested with wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
And then, you know, what brought you back in? When did you decide? Because you were out we did the PIW Pro Show.
I was done in 04. Right. I was working.
When we did the PIW Pro Show.
I started working around a little bit on the real, like, you know, low-key underground Jersey indies.
Yeah.
And I was 16, and that's when I kind of became Chris Dickinson. I adopted the name around that point. But I was still a kid. I was a child. But I kind of just stopped around that time, and I just put my focus into other things. I wasn't really I had kind of became so disinterested with the WWE product. I stopped watching it in 2002, and I never really looked back. I just needed a break. My whole life was so focused, so geared towards wrestling, and I didn't really have any other experiences up until that point. I mean, if you remember, I was so intense about it when I was 14, 15, 16 years old. You know, I'm only a 16-year-old kid. I wanted to do other things and see what else was going on with life. But when I eventually got back into it, it's because of Sean.
Right, Sean Maluda.
Sean Maluda and Johnny Mongway, Tyson, Jocka. They were going to form some sort of a team, and they were giving all these details, and they were telling me, man, why don't you get back into it? You wanted it so bad. It was always your dream. You took it the most serious. You could be so good at it, you know, all that stuff to try to get you to get involved after you've been away from it for a while.
And that was 2009, right?
That was like more like 2007. Yeah. And then I said, all right, I'll start going to training. Then I started going to the gym. And when I got into the gym is when things got a little bit more serious. I kind of started adopting that into my lifestyle. And it just, everything just kind of came together.
Now, I remember you were, there was like some indie fed in Jersey. Wasn't it like the Fun Athletic guys or something like that?
A long time ago. I was like 15 years old.
Yeah, that was around that time.
Yeah. No, this was around when I was like 19.
Okay. So like 19, is that when you got into Beyond Wrestling?
Well, I...
Because you were there from the beginning.
No, yeah. I kind of came back in 2007, okay? My grandfather passed away in 2007, around this time of the year in 2007. And I kind of snapped a little bit. I kind of snapped, and I just made a lot of lifestyle changes. I just, you know, wanted to really just change things up. I was growing up. I was kind of coming out of the whole scene of the music, and you know, it wasn't really for me anymore. I wanted to do something different, and wrestling was always my first love. So I actually got with kind of a couple small Jersey indies. I was working for WXW, you know, office company in Pennsylvania, and then I started working for Jersey All Pro Wrestling. Now, people always say Beyond Wrestling is my home. Jersey All Pro Wrestling is really my first home, and that's what I always wanted it to be.
Because we used to all go to the shows like when we were kids, and fucking just sit in the crowd and watch them. I remember we went to the Bingo Hall in Bayonne, and when they fucking
charity hall.
Right, when they threw, I forgot who they got thrown into the wall. Danny Drake.
Okay. He ended his career. Talking about it the other day, actually, on Facebook with Mike Tobin.
Oh, God.
The other half of the Boogie Nights.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how long ago that was. Yeah. And I remember as kids, like, you know, we were in the fucking backyard. Like, your nickname was Paco Loki, basically.
I mean, I did martial arts my whole life. when I was coming into the idea of actually believing I could be a wrestler, I was about maybe 11, 12 years old, and I was getting really good at martial arts and what I did. And I was taking to guys like Rob Van Dam, especially. Right. He was like my favorite. But then when we discovered indie wrestling and I got into guys like Loki, I said, wow, I want to be like that guy, because he was doing everything that was like me. You know, I was into martial arts. I was into that lifestyle. Hardcore, I was into it. So when you see somebody...
I respect, honor, discipline.
Oh, and, but it was real. It wasn't because Loki said it. It was because that was what I was really doing in my real everyday life, and I wanted to find a way to make a wrestling character out of it, and Loki was just happened to be a guy who was doing what I wanted to do, but he was actually doing it, so I took to him as a huge fan, and I loved it. But then you want to fast forward,
yeah,
when I started getting back into it, and I hadn't watched wrestling for a few years at all. For about 3 years I didn't follow anything at all, and my friend Lance, Lance is a huge wrestling aficionado, and he has a gigantic DVD collection and tape library. And he was like, you know, big man, you really got to check out these guys from Pro Wrestling Noah. You got to see this guy Kenta. I'm going to show you this match he had with your boy Loki. And I'd be like, and you know me, I'm like a dick. I'm like, oh, I don't want to fucking watch this shit. Whatever. Leave me alone. I don't care. He's like, big man, I'm telling you, you got to watch this match. So he showed me on DVD Final Battle 2005 with Loki and Kenta.
Okay, I remember that.
Okay, he showed me that match. And I sat there and I watched it and I was like, they perfected the style. And I was like, Loki kind of moved to the wayside. And I was like, I want to be like that guy. And I started, I was a huge Japanese wrestling fan.
That's going way back. I remember
I was into it hard body. But I didn't really follow Pro Wrestling Noah as closely as a lot of other people did, because I was out of the loop when they started bringing those guys into work Ring of Honor. So I hadn't really seen extensively what was going on with Marufuji, with Kenta, with Kenta Kobashi, Masawa. I hadn't seen all the stuff that was going on. I just completely cut it all out. And at that point, I just became like a vacuum. I was like, I need to take in as much of this as humanly possible, as fast as possible, to make up for everything I missed. And I was modeling myself more so after Kenta style. And then I got into like Katsuhiko Nakajima and more like the guys who are doing the kicking style out there in like the, you know, mid, late 2000s. And I still appreciated Loki and everything, but I kind of fell into a new range of influences. And then obviously now everything's different. Now my influence is all there. Everything. I mean, I hardly even watch wrestling anymore at all, because I'm around it so much. I'm always constantly taking it in person, that, you know, if I'm going to watch wrestling, I'm going to watch stuff that really hits home to me as, like, you know, childhood stuff. That's what I enjoy. Yeah. Old WWF. And I still watch old All Japan Pro Wrestling. I'll watch some Japan stuff, recent stuff, and things that I like. I'm very selective at what I watch. But during that time period, I was really taking to guys that worked that style, because that was the style I always dreamt of creating myself. You
right.
know?
I mean, even from when you originally came back, like, you've changed quite a bit, like, not only physically, because physically you've put on so much muscle from like the early days of Beyond to now.
Mm-hmm.
But your style is a lot different. When you watch back those old matches, your grappling style, with, you know, you could see that the karate influence was still there in the beginning, and now you have more like a brawlic, you know, like, just throw them around the ring fucking
It's
style.
Just a natural progression of you realize what you're good at, what your actual capabilities are, and what you bring to the table. When I started to look around at all those other guys and realize, like, well, fucking Loki, he's like 5'6", 160 pounds. Kenta's like 5'6", 170 pounds. I'm about 5'11", I'm about 230 pounds. I'm really way bigger than any of these guys. And I started to realize, like, man, my favorite wrestlers, really, let's look back on some of my favorite wrestlers. Guys like Dr. Death, Steve Williams, Mike Awesome, Kenta Kobashi, I mean, you know, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man Randy Savage, you know, the Road Warriors, the British Bulldogs. I mean, I was influenced by muscle-bound wrestlers. These are the guys that made me want to, you know, go to the gym and work out hard and be big and strong. And I started, you know, and I got really good with all my lifts. Like, I was deadlifting 500-600 pounds, bench pressing 350 pounds, squatting 400-500 pounds. And I realized, I was like, you know, I saw guys like Michael Elgin, doing these things with like powerlifting type moves and this and that. And I said, I want to take this stuff to the next level. They do it and it looks really good, but I wanted to take it to like a violent level. I wanted it to look better. And I've always been about that head drop style, that old school King's Road, All Japan Pro Wrestling style. And I just wanted to integrate some, like, you know, deadlift, just straight up full strength, hard body moves into my style, but still also having the striking and the martial arts mixed in. I just wanted to be a well-rounded performer. But at the core root of it, I mean, I just don't think about styles anymore. I don't think about, you know, how we pick apart wrestlers as being like, you're an indie style, you're a TV style, you're a Japanese style, you're a this style, you're a that style. If you really look at great wrestling over
it's
the everywhere. Years,
it's everything.
It's everything. You know, that's why you can't say, oh, these guys in NXT, everybody likes to have this argument, are better than the guys on TV, whatever, this and that. You know, everybody, if you're a good worker, you're a good worker. It shows. It doesn't matter what moves you do. It doesn't matter if you do a drop kick or if you do a tornado spin kick or if you do a power bomb or you do a DDT. If you're a good worker, you're a good worker. I mean, Jake the Snake Roberts, he didn't do shit. He didn't do shit. He had no fucking moves. He had no fucking physique. He had one move, two moves. You know, he just told the story really well. He had great ring psychology, whatever you want to define psychology as. His psychology was amazing. And, you know, there's certain guys who are just so good at certain things. Hulk Hogan. I mean, people like to shit on Hulk Hogan. He's the greatest wrestler of all time for a reason. The guy was like a conductor of an orchestra, and the crowd was his orchestra. You know what I mean? He led the crowd like an orchestra through like a symphony. They cheered whenever he wanted. He was like the front man of a band. You know what I mean? He had them hanging on every move he did. You know, when I started putting together my wrestling style, I started thinking about it. You know, what sets all the superstars apart from the jabronis? What sets the superstars apart from even the guys who are the greatest wrestlers of all time? You know, wrestle like your moves are over. Look at The Rock. Look at Stone Cold Steve Austin. The Rock bottom, Stone Cold Stunner. They both did the spine buster. The people's elbow, the elbow off the second rope. The mud hole stomps. The Rock would stomp you and shake his leg. The Rock did a DDT. Stone Cold Steve Austin did a stun gun. Like, they all have signature moves, and they wrestled like all of their moves were over all the time. No movement wasted. When you start getting into the habit of placing your moves in the right places, it's not about moves anymore. It's about when you do that move, you're going to make it mean something. You know, it's not about just going out there and doing a bunch of moves.
Hitting every fucking move.
We see that all the time. And you know what? Take a look at some of these companies out there that promoted that style with all these flippy dippy guys. You know what I mean? And that stuff is kind of gone by the wayside. Nobody cares about it anymore.
That's true. Like the when Ring of Honor was first around, like you had your Jack Evans and, you know, the spot guys.
Yeah.
And they were the guys like, you know, like the Teddy Harts and stuff getting all the attention on the shows, but that's kind of dissipated in the last couple years.
Listen, I'm not to discredit their ability. Those guys have their place. But if you look into the rich history of professional wrestling, the guys who always make the most money are the guys who are the best all-around performers. And like I said, it's not about...
The guys who are able to tell a story while doing their match.
Listen, man, it's always going to go back to it, and I don't care what anybody says. I know it sounds redundant, and it's played out. Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, Terry Funk, Roddy Piper, Hulk Hogan. I mean, these are Macho Man, Randy Savage. I mean, these are the guys, the names that you're going to be hearing about for the rest of wrestling's existence. It's because, you know, they were able to engage you emotionally in what's going on. That's something that's missing. A big part of wrestling is missing because everything's become so routine, so choreographed, so thought out that, you know, the crowd understands that what they're watching is that, and they're not reacting emotionally to it anymore. It's because the performers, they're just not original anymore. There's not a lot of originality left anymore in wrestling. And obviously, that's because everything's been done. There's been, you know, times have changed, and everybody does what everybody does. Everybody looks the same, you know, wears the same gear, does the same moves, you know.
Yeah, how many guys have a fucking super kick now? You know, like, everybody's doing the fucking super kick like it means nothing.
Yeah, like, it means nothing. And it's just, they say that what I did was bad for the wrestling business or bad for wrestling or it's ugly scar for wrestling. It's everything is bad for wrestling. You know, what are you going to do, honestly, right now to really interject integrity back into the business? It's fake and everybody knows it. It's so hard to make people believe that anything going on is real or to get them to emotionally engage themselves in it. You know, it takes a lot to really get people to believe in it.
I was actually going to suggest The last time I saw a bunch of fans get so pissed off at wrestling was before your situation was actually the thing with Lesnar and the Undertaker. Like, when was the last time I saw fans that pissed off over something that was so obviously a work?
And it seems like such a waste, too. I mean, I don't follow it, but, like, God, like,
and
it seems like such a waste that they did that.
I mentioned to him before that these people know for a fact that it's fake, but then the minute your video came out, it's kind of like the switch turned off in their head, and for a second they actually thought it was real.
I mean, back in the day, wasn't that the goal? Didn't they want to believe that when, like, the Macho Man and Hulk Hogan split up, it's like, man, maybe Hulk Hogan really was nailing Liz. Like, you know, maybe he really was fucking banging her out, and Savage is really pissed off. I mean, I bet you people really asked those questions. I bet they said, God damn, man, I bet you Hulk Hogan, man. I bet you he was like Three Finger Louie in that pussy, bro. Like, you know? Or people talked about Sergeant Slaughter, man. He had to wear like the fucking bulletproof vest when he walked into the arena because they thought that there was going to be a sniper that took him out because they really thought he was like the Iraqi sympathizer or some shit. Dude, it's like, that's beautiful shit. Wrestling is missing that type of... of entertainment value. After you watch the moves and you watch the great wrestling matches, and you just want drama. I just want the Hollywood backlot brawl. You know what I mean? I just want Goldust. Where's Goldust at? I mean, people say the shit that I did in that video was extreme. I mean, dude,
stuff. The end of the Hollywood backlot brawl?
Yeah, I mean, the dude was
Piper kissing him.
And that was that was 1996. I had a conversation with Scott Hall at a diner one time. I was like, I was asking him all the questions about the Goldust angle. I was like, so what the hell happened with the Goldust angle? And he was just spilling the beans about like Vince's homosexual stuff. It was great. And he was just saying like back then they didn't even let them go outside the ring to fight.
No,
they didn't. Chair shots. There was not no blood, nothing. Okay. And he was sitting there in Vince's office and he's like, hell are you, why are you gonna put me, why do I have to do this, you know, why do I have to do this angle where this gay guy wants me, you know? So it's like, you know, there's always gonna be things that are gonna rub people the wrong way, and that's supposed to be that way,
right? You're wrestling is supposed to get an emotion out of you. It's telling a story. It's bringing, you know, you into what it is, as if it, so you buy it.
Yeah,
you're supposed to buy it. Yeah. It's a carny show.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have no qualms whatsoever about what happened with the match with the girl that people see the video and they think all this stuff.
Well,
I guess
we should let's back up a quick second. To get into that for people who haven't actually seen it, there was a match you had a couple weeks ago with a girl named Kimberly.
Yeah.
And what happens is the promotion Beyond put out a small video showing basically the end of the match.
They didn't. It was a guy who took a video.
Oh,
with
it
was cell phone.
It wasn't
and
Beyond.
The original video was the angle. The reason why it went viral. It's because the original video, the angle of the Pazuzu bomb was so brutal. It outweighed brutality of all the other ones, that when Beyond released their video, they showed the different angles to make sure people saw it. She did not hit her head on the turnbuckle, because the one that the guy took off his phone,
it looked like she did.
I remember when you posted that, it looked fucking
it
brutal.
It was fucking crazy. Like, so I was like, all right, you know, but hey, she was okay. It was actually a fairly easy back bump. You're gonna crucify me for making it look real? You could kiss my ass.
Well, that's your job.
It's my job.
It's your job.
Absolutely.
To make it look real.
And I'm sorry, anybody who had a problem with it, I mean, I could give you a list right now of every WWF legend that told me what a great job I did being the best fucking heel in
Except
the world.
Didn't I think it was Hawk, didn't he condemn it?
Hawk's dead.
I'm like, Animal, sorry. I'm sorry. Animal. I always forget which one's alive.
Animal actually did condemn it, and then we did a show together.
Okay.
And I spoke to him.
Oh, really?
And we talked. And he admitted it to me. He said, damn, man, you know what? 30 years. He said, the girl's okay? And I was like, yeah, she's okay. He goes, in 30 years, I've never seen anything like that. And I was like, yeah, and you were in the fucking Road Warriors.
That's, yeah, like,
you know,
one of the most stiffest tag teams of all time.
I was sitting there. I mean, the Road Warriors are the reason I went to the gym. The Road Warriors are the reason I wanted to be a bouncer. The Road Warriors are the reason for a lot of things I wanted to do in my life. To hear those words come out of that guy's mouth, to understand that I emotionally moved him and made him believe in something that I did, I was so. I mean, you could have just killed me right there. I was like, damn, you know what? I've patterned everything I've done in my life after the Road Warriors. Just they were the original trendsetters of brutality. Like, if I could make that guy sick, I could make anybody sick.
Which I found funny about that whole thing is, like, they had a reputation for being stiff.
I mean, of course.
It's not like they were never taking liberties with anybody.
Man, we're from the old school. We'd never put our hands on a woman. Well, I'm like, hey, man, 2015, intergender wrestling is a thing. No matter you want to believe it or whether you like it or not, it's a thing.
Well, we spend a lot of time on the show talking about, like, political correctness and when that whole kind of... The whole country kind of changed its kind of view, and everything's offensive to everybody.
It's just a phase,
but, like,
you know, it's just a trend.
When you look at the early 2000s, especially, you have Bubba Ray fucking powerbombing women through tables and all that shit.
He fucking powerbombed Mae Young through a table.
I mean, I sat there with Monster Mag, actually, and we were talking about, we were making a laundry list of incidents where guys used violence against women wrestlers. You know, they had an incident that happened at the charity hall where this girl with an already broken neck or something was involved in a spot with the Hit Squad. Ambulance had to take her out of there. She had a broken neck. They blamed it on them. They were on the news. They were on this. They were on that. They fucking hated it. The heat was crazy. I mean, dude, you know, come on. Chris Jericho hit China over the head with a chair, bashed her hand with a hammer. I mentioned it in a podcast. Triple H, I remember, was dishing out pedigrees on chicks left and right.
He pedigreed Stephanie.
What about all the shit that Rhino did in ECW?
Yeah. Rhino was...
Happy Mother's Day, you fucking bitch.
Rhino was goring the fuck out of chicks. I mean, dude.
Pile driving women off the second rope through a table.
Every fucking Mark White Knight loser out there, or every idiot promoter that dislikes me for whatever reason or wanted to get a rub off of it. That was all it was. Anybody in the business that wanted to talk smack about it or use it in their promotional campaigns for whatever upcoming shows they had. I mean, like the Gabe Sapolskis, who were talking smack about it, not naming no names, but using it to promote their own show. They just wanted a rub off of it, man. There's so many people that were talking about it that just clearly wanted a rub off of it because it was the only thing anybody was talking about for a couple days.
I mean, do you think there's a criticism to the whole intergender match thing that comes with the territory of doing such a thing, like
men
hitting women not being okay no matter under any circumstance?
Absolutely, and there's a lot of people who have, like, you know, completely different viewpoints about that. But you have to understand, in professional wrestling, I always looked at it like this, and I've been doing intergender wrestling matches for years, which is why I don't understand why this was such a big deal.
Right.
I've kicked the shit out of some of these girls, and they've kicked the shit
the first time I saw you was Haley Hatred.
Addie Starr, you've wrestled.
I've wrestled Christina, and right. Dude, I mean, these matches were solid matches. These girls could go. You give them the chance, and you give them, you know, the open canvas to actually work. Because the thing is with the girls, let's be real.
Right.
Some of the girl-on-girl wrestling is garbage.
It is.
Because the problem is you have a majority of these girls, and it's a large majority of them. They're terrible, and they don't want to put any work in. They don't want to bust their ass. And then you have a finite amount of these girls that want to really haul ass, and they want to work. And you get in there with them, you give them a shot, and they'll show you what they can do.
Yeah, you have people that don't even realize that they can work just as hard or sometimes even harder than how the guys work.
Yeah, and if you're taking care of them, they're not going to get hurt.
Right.
But that's the problem, is people just are so bothered by the fact that, you know, it's guy-on-girl violence. But, I mean, you know, it's still a physical theater.
Like I pointed out on another episode was that it's how is it any different from a movie or a TV show where, you know, a guy strikes a girl in that? Like, it's still entertainment.
And in the period of wrestling where it's like, what are they, the WWE calls it some bullshit, the reality era.
Yeah, reality era.
I know, you can't even say it. Yeah. It's so corny. Everybody knows wrestling's fake. It's like, what do you really think? I'm in there beating the shit out of this girl to get my rocks off.
That's what people did. I clearly saw people on the Facebook comments and all that shit thinking exactly that.
I could tell you right now that those girls honestly hit me harder than most of the guys do, you know?
Like, that's kind of where I was defending, is like, if these girls want to be taken seriously and be something more than women's wrestlers and just be wrestlers, period, mm-hmm. they have to mix it up with the guys to get to that next level of taking themselves seriously.
Absolutely. I mean, but if you really look into, you know, what really goes on when choosing these girls that end up in the WWE, which is pretty much the only thing that anybody really wants to do, 95% of people that get into wrestling, it's all about the one thing, the one thing. They don't care if you know how to wrestle, especially if you're a girl. They
treat them like garbage.
They do their girl tryouts kind of just like, you know, get into a swimsuit, let's see what you look like. You know, they don't give a flying fuck if you know how to work.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's very evident with what they put out on a weekly basis.
We had a Divas match, I think, that lasted like 10 seconds a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, something like that.
And that's when that whole Give Divas a Chance hashtag started. Right. Which was, I think, maybe a couple of days before the video of
that's
you
what
leaked.
People are saying. Yeah, something about this Give Divas a Chance, and then it was ironic that happened.
someone gave one a chance, and you
asked,
fucking
and you shall receive.
Ring. Yeah, and I mean, that girl does what she has to do. She's pretty over in that building.
I personally found it a bit sexist that there was so many men criticizing this girl's choice to be in that situation. Like, it's like, we're men, we know better than you, so you shouldn't be doing this. I mean, is that not...
Listen, coming from my generation of wrestling fans, anybody who would think that was anything less than fucking awesome is a total idiot. You know what I mean? Back in the day when we were fans, John,
we popped like that anything.
Dude, that was what we lived for. This is the kind of stuff that we lived for as wrestling fans, was seeing crazy shit. I don't give a fuck if it's 2015. I don't give a fuck if it's this PG era and all this stuff. I'm not trying to be like everybody else. I'm trying to do what I want to do. I go out there and I risk my body and I put my ass on the line. You know, I'm going to live out my career the way I want to live it out. You know, this isn't me just trying to be another cookie cutter jabroni trying to get that developmental contract. You know, I'm not trying to just be another guy. I'm trying to be one of the guys. Not that could because I want to make it to the top of the WWE. Or it's not about that. It's so much deeper. Wrestling to me, it means so much more. I love wrestling so much. I'm not in it for the fame. I'm in it for the wrestling. I want to change things. I want to set some new standards. I want to walk to the beat of my own drum. I want to, like, you know, make people realize that there's more than just what everybody else wants to do.
Right, to create something, to like let you set yourself apart from every other bullshit, you know, that's out there.
And it's weird because I would think that you wanting to, you know, walk to the beat of your own drum would be something that would turn people on to like you.
And
in this case, it looks like it's in some instances it's doing the opposite, which doesn't make sense.
It doesn't, though. It's because, I mean, honestly, since the video, I've seen nothing but upward trajectory. I'm sure
you, booking wise, are getting
you got to look at it like this. At first, it was like, damn, this could be bad. I should be worried about this. And then it's like, damn, no. Anybody who thought it was both fake just got
worked. This came hot off the heels of the whole CZW incident.
Yeah.
And what really happened with that? Was it just like the crowd didn't want to give you a chance?
No. See, I'm usually the most over babyface at CZW. I was wrestling a guy who's kind of like, you know, he's over, but he's not. Do they cheer for him? They don't know. Old school kind of dude. He's a little older. He's who's got their title right now. I mean, it's a long, long story.
Okay.
Thing is, match was I wanted to call an audible and change the game plan of the match mid-match. He didn't want to do that. Okay?
Okay.
He's just not on my level. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to sound like a jerk off. I respect the guy. He's a nice guy.
This was Black G's?
Yeah. Okay. But he's just, you know, it wasn't working out. It wasn't the crowd was awesome. I loved it, you know, and that's my thing. And then I wanted to cut a crazy promo after, and I did, and everybody just loved it too. Obviously, I made the headlines of every wrestling website and dirt sheet.
I mean, what was it? Like, I heard you did, like, I haven't actually seen the match. There's something about, like, a headlock going on for, like, fucking minutes.
Oh, hell yeah, man. Because, like, they just want to champ boring because he was doing some chain wrestling. Okay, I'll lock you in that headlock and make you champ boring for 5 minutes. And then I'll start giving you a little more and a little more. But unfortunately, he just wasn't willing to alleviate the control to me as being the heel of the match. I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound like a jerk.
Right, the heel is always usually in control of a wrestling match.
He just is not really a heel. He doesn't, not a face. The guy doesn't know what he wants to be. And he's just, you know, he's whatever. And it's just right there and then, dealing in a situation like that, trying my best to just make things work. And there's a lot of people that actually hit me up and said that they loved the match, that they thought it was a great match.
Philly's just a weird crowd, though, and they've been in the dirt sheets since at least Royal Rumble.
I mean, so if that's what they want, I gave it to them. I gave them the figurehead to hate. I gave them something to hate and to talk about. And
you,
they did. And
you would have thought that would, like, you know, get you, you know, more heat there, if whatever, for whatever reason, but instead that ends up with you parting your
ways with them. I just quit. It's because they didn't want to do anything to capitalize on it, because CZW is a joke. Okay, you want to talk about jokes? CZW is a complete joke. I mean, they're just a garbage wrestling company at this point. You know,
you know what? The truth is, CZW as a reputation of trying to be, you know, to trying to capitalize on ECW's, you know, popularity.
Maybe years ago.
But then, like, it never really evolved anything past that.
The problem with CZW is
they tried.
Is the guy who owns it. He does not have any direction. There, it is so mismanaged. It's so unorganized.
Is it a situation of too many cooks in the kitchen?
Way too many cooks in the kitchen. So many guys want to book their own angles. He listens to too many people that aren't really that good. He's not. He does. He only wants to keep people there that he's cool with. He just, like, has his guys there that are his buddies or just want to keep things easy going. And they want to just keep going with that. You know, there's a lot of guys there who aren't going to get over anywhere else. They're not going to go do anything anywhere else. They want to, you know, keep in power. And that's fine. Let them do what they want to do. I'll gladly go wrestle someplace else.
I mean, for, you know, the rare exceptions being like a Drake Younger or Sammy who worked there and made it out. And Ambrose, obviously. I mean, the deathmatch style as far as wrestling is kind of dying out.
It's done, yeah. Yeah. No, deathmatch wrestling is non-existent. And they kind of coming out of that, and with using guys like me and pushing guys like me, I never really even got a push at CZW. I just went out and did my job and busted my ass, you know, and took whatever they gave me and ran with it. The problem with CZW is locker room morale. So many guys don't want to be there, you know, and these are the guys that actually have no place else really to wrestle but CZW. So you'd imagine that they would want to be there, but some of the guys
don't. They make the best of it,
yeah.
At least.
I mean, CZW still has the ability to make people. I mean, I definitely got a huge rub off of the work I did with CZW. But unfortunately, at the end of the day, there's just, like I said, there's too much BS there and too much just nonsense for what you're actually, you know, getting out of it. It's not worth it when you could go and get more someplace else, you know. I mean, it's a trend of quitting CZW right now between Biff Busick, JT Dunn, AR Fox.
Busick has been making a name for himself in PWG. Like, he's been working a lot of their shows recently.
Biff Busick, in my opinion, is one of the best wrestlers in the world. He's one of my finest opponents. You know, he's a great, great wrestler, and he's one of the people who told me straight up, I don't mean to spill the beans on him, he fucking hated CZW. We just hated wrestling there, you know? I mean, we basically booked our entire angle. And if I got politicked out of the company for a couple months by Masada, it's because he's a bitter asshole over his girlfriend. And we booked a whole angle going into Cage of Death with me up in a four-way with Sozio, Drew Gulak, and Biff Busick. Biff Busick had the title. Him and Gulak were going to trade it back and forth. Eventually, I was going to win at the end of the year because I was the top babyface. That was a story. We did an angle where we were going to have a three-way dance. DJ told me to pack my bags and go home.
I remember that
show. The crowd went insane. They bid on it. We had money. Oh, my God. Dirty Daddy was the most over thing ever. Masada didn't want me to go back. Whatever. Politics. DJ's a bitch, and he listens to all these deathmatch jabronis because they're his homeboys. And, you know, that's it. I wasn't there for a few months. Then I came back. Huge beat DJ at Cage. Obviously, Black G's found an opening. Politics himself into the winning the world title again. I didn't care, man. The world title in CZW
means
a curse.
Nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody ever cared about the world champion in CZW. I was just looking forward to maybe bringing some legitimacy.
I always found the best of the best being more important than like being a world champion.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed like it meant more.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? I started thinking about it. I said, damn, back in the day, I never gave a fuck about CZW. They always sucked. You know what I mean? I never was really a big fan of CZW. I was a Jersey All Pro Wrestling guy.
Right.
I was a Jersey All Wrestling guy. I was a Ring of Honor guy, you know? And then I just said, fuck you, I'll go work for Ring of Honor instead.
Did they ever try to talk you into doing Tournament of Death?
No, I debuted at a Tournament of Death.
But you never like to actually work the deathmatch.
I would never do a deathmatch like that. You know, it's just so cheap, in my opinion. I don't need, obviously, as you could tell by my recent exploits, I don't need blood in order to get something over. Those guys do anything they possibly can do to get over, because the fact is they just can't do whatever it takes without the goddamn gimmicks.
Like he mentioned it before, the concept of death matches in 2015 is something really I can't wrap my head around it anymore. It just seems like a fad that's just died out a long time ago, and
it's because it's one of those things. It's like, where the hell are you going to go after? What are you going to do next? What the hell is Matt Tremont going to do next? Blow the guy's brains out with a 12-gauge shotgun? Or is he what is he going to do? I think it should go back to like FMW-style explosions and fucking sparks like and theatrics.
Do you think there are people out there that are legitimately still into death matches? Or do you think they just watch it based on the fact that they want to see how far it's going to go?
Yeah, they're in the KKK. They're fucking white trash, dude. They're in the backwoods of fucking Alabama somewhere wanting to see people run into light tubes and get cut up with barbed wire. You know, that's like what it's about, man.
And you know what I found interesting about the situation with the backlash you got, and we discussed this before, was there was the thing with the Young Bucks and Candice LeRae. Where they fucking super kicked her with thumbtacks.
She was fucking, I saw, and I never saw it before, and then I finally saw a picture of it, and I said, the fucking girl was, she had blood from the top of her chin.
She was a fucking Muda scale.
I showed him the clip for the first time a couple weeks ago, and, like, you've never seen something like that before coming from a woman, especially in an indie promotion.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about it. Like, Masada and Christina Von Erie stabbed her in the head with sticks to make her bleed. I mean, let's not even talk about LaFisto. She tried to get LaFisto, a rub off of it writing that article. But you know what? To her credit, she went through barbed wire, glass, the whole thing
she's
for years.
Pretty hardcore female wrestler.
I mean, they did all this stuff, and you know what? They got to all just be sitting there saying, fuck, man. We did all this, but these dudes didn't even bleed, and they got this over. I mean, so what am I going to do? Feel bad, or am I going to feel good about it? I'm going to feel pretty good about it.
Fuck yeah!
You know what I'm saying?
Do you feel like maybe if instead of just that one clip, if the whole match
The whole point, and that's what I discussed with some other people, was it was a video taken completely out of context. If they would have seen the pop up huge Hurricane Rana off the top rope and all the other stuff and the this and that, it wouldn't have mattered as much. It looked like to most people that I literally took a girl in the ring from the crowd, took her shirt off, and smashed her over the head with a chair and just threw her. That's what it looked like to most people. Because of the way it was just one of those things. And this is, you can get into a whole other topic of this, of like Big Brother's watching. You're always being watched. Cell phone cameras are like the downfall of society. It's like you can't get away with anything anymore. And it was just a wrestling show, but I'm just saying, just in life in general, you will be filmed doing anything ever. If anything ever happens, people automatically, their first reaction is, let me not do anything about it. Let me take my camera out. And the guy just shot it so perfectly, completely took it out of context, that people believed it was something bigger than it really was.
Did she actually hit her head on the ring bell? No, that never happened.
It was all a work.
Okay. No,
I hate to admit it. And you know what? We said, God damn it, what are we going to do? Because we're getting so much heat from female activists. I got hit up by Christian organizations. I had so many people hitting me up. The company was getting so much heat. They wanted to get the building shut down. It was the hugest thing. And it was like, we have to alleviate some of the tension, but still kind of move on with class and execute this as a wrestling angle.
And is that when she came out with her video?
Basically, we needed to come out with something. And a lot of people were disappointed that we did that. It's because they wanted to still believe it was real. And we said, if we just completely come out and say it's fake, well, it's going to be an insult to our fan base. But it's like, you know what? We're taking a fucking beating over here. I'm going to go out there and tell people, hey, fuck you. You believed me. I'm that good. Why don't you just give me the credit I fucking deserve instead of shitting all over my life? I mean, I hate to do that. I wish I could just walk around and be this guy. It's like, yeah, I fucking killed this bitch. Yo, you know, I'm Chris Dickinson, the Dirty Daddy. But the fact is, it's just not the way it is in 2015.
All right. So, I mean, you obviously got some criticism that the actual toss was sloppy and all that shit.
Sloppy? Well, obviously, these people.
I know.
I've executed the move.
How many times?
My coworkers rib me. I executed the move 100 times to people of all shapes and sizes.
Right.
Every background of physicality. I've never, knock on wood. Hold up.
There you go.
I've never hurt anybody with that move. It's a fucking gimmick. I've never hurt or injured anyone ever, man. Outside of, like, you know, we get a little banged up. We get a little bruised up. We get a little knocked loopy sometimes because it's pro wrestling. It ain't fucking ballet. I've never injured anyone. I knew exactly what I was doing with her.
Right.
You know, and you have all these idiots on the internet, these guys who want to use these like wannabe insider terms. He botched that power bomb. It's like botch.
That you overthrew her.
That's the whole point. It's not a fucking jackknife power bomb. It's the Pazuzu bomb. It's a release.
Yeah, it's a release.
It's a mixture of two of my favorite wrestlers. It's Scott Hall, Mike Awesome. It's my version of the Awesome Bomb.
Right.
It's called the Pazuzu Bomb.
And I had gotten into shit with people online defending it, was that Mike Awesome was notorious for fucking throwing Masato Tanaka poorly with his, and he never got shit.
Not even that. What about fucking Spike Dudley? He was like 80 pounds.
But that's the thing. Maybe they did get shit. Maybe there was a lot of people that complained, but they didn't have any forum for it.
There was no social media.
The social media, the internet creates a completely different dynamic for every form of anything in life right now in 2015. And wrestling, it's been raped, pillaged, and plundered by social media. But also, there's pros and cons to it, too. You know, a lot of pros to it. Okay?
Yeah, I mean, you get a fan base out of it.
Look at Beyond Wrestling. Beyond Wrestling is the fourth or fifth most watched wrestling company in the world, all solely based off of
online
social media, YouTube, etc., you know?
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like, had there been a male opponent of like a similar size, that you would have still gotten the same criticism for that video?
Dude, I fucking have done that move to Pinky Sanchez off the middle rope, flying through the air through a table. I did it to Drake Younger. I launched him under the fucking bottom turnbuckle across the ring. I did it to Joey Janela. He was fucking completely airborne for about 2 minutes, dude. I gave Joey Janela the Chris Benoit one, both standing on the top rope, powerbomb into the ring. I mean, hey, people out there, some of us know what we're doing. We can do these things. You're paying the money to watch us. I will give you what I want you to see. You're the mark. I'm the wrestler. Don't tell the wrestler how to do the wrestler's job. We're the ones entertaining you. And obviously, I entertained you a little bit too good.
Yeah, that's the case. Yeah. I mean, prior to this, we had watched a clip from last night's Lucha Underground.
Uh-huh.
And they also are doing the whole intergender thing. And one of the matches was booked around the idea that the male wrestler, Angelico, did not want to hit the female wrestler.
Okay.
But he was constantly putting her in sexual innuendo situations where, grabbing her ass or, like, making it look like he's fucking her by the way he's pinning and stuff like that.
I remember you telling me they actually had to heavily edit the match,
And apparently in the actual taping, it was a little bit more, like, he was, like, you know, humping her from behind and shit like that, and it got cut from the what actually aired.
I mean, if you're going to edit it, why do it?
Right. You know? But, I mean, there's obviously the criticisms, like, now, with intergender matches, like, is that part of it? Like, when you got shit for the way you pinned her, even though it was, part of her gimmick was that specific type of pin, but people took it as, like, almost in a sexual way.
Look, there was nothing sexual about that match. I was not sexual with her at all. If you watch the entire match, I was just wrestling her like any other guy, you know.
Right, but like there are other not specifically your match, but there are other intergender matches where that's kind of a common theme.
Yeah, and it's kind of cheesy, you know. It's because it's just an easy go-to
cheap heat.
Yeah, cheap heat. Exactly. There's no cheap heat in the finish. That's her finish, and I mocked her finish pin, and she uses that alligator clutch move, and we were just telling a little story for the crowd because she's undefeated there and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, people want to think that it was like a move where I just put my balls in her face or whatever, you know.
Right, teabagger.
Just get out of here. It's not, it had nothing
but
to do
with
that.
But do you think that those types of intergender matches devalue?
Wrestling is completely sexual in every way. Let's be realistic here. Well. Guys on guys, girls on girls, girls on guys. We're rubbing each other. We're up against each other. We're executing these moves together. We're all in very sexual positions all the time. To say that was a sexual thing, no. I mean, everything is a sexual thing.
No, I'm saying when it's like the obvious, like, oh, he's grabbing her tits, or like, you know, those kind of. Yeah, do you feel like it devalues what you're trying to do when you have an intergender match? Like
competition. I mean, well, put it this way: it's like these girls. How do you think the girls would feel? You're just going to use me because I have tits and I have a vagina and an ass, or are you going to use me because I'm a wrestler?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to say that everything doesn't have its place. It's because obviously this is wrestling. Everything has its place, right?
Yeah.
Where nothing's ever really going to make sense. But, hey, if the girl could go, she wants to do something, why don't you give her a legitimate shot like you would the other guys? And let's see what she really can do other than just, oh, get some heat because she's got boobs and I'm going to grab her boobs because I'm just like that weird, creepy guy. Like, that's easy. You know what I mean? That's easy. I don't want to do that. I want to do...
You want to have an actual competitive match.
I want a challenge.
Right.
I want to... that's what I always said to myself about doing intergender matches was, yeah, some of these girls, maybe they... Maybe with other people, they can't have these good matches. You
so
know?
They stick to those kind of comedy, risque spot matches.
It's my job to make them look as good as possible. If they could look their best wrestling me, then that's on me for doing a good job. You know, I always think about Ric Flair. Ric Flair's the man. He can make anybody look good in any situation, you know. I want to be like Ric Flair. I don't care if you give me a girl. I don't care if you give me a guy. I don't care if you give me a fucking dog. I want to put on the best possible performance possible right. That's going to leave some sort of a lasting impression on people. And you cannot, you know, you can't judge me negatively for that.
I had a question about the psychology of some of that kind of match. Now, obviously, you're a physically, like, bigger guy.
Yeah.
So when you have a woman who's, like, what, 100, 110 pounds, and you have to fucking throw a punch at her, like, how do you sell that? So, I mean, because obviously in a real life situation, you would fucking kill her.
Look, there's some situations where you kind of just, like I said, we're in 2015. We abandoned the rules of psychology and pro wrestling.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, you look back to some of my better matches. I mean, people slept on this one because, you know, it's obviously indie wrestling. Not everybody's going to watch everything. My match with Christina was by far, I think, my best intergender match. You know, the way you call these matches, it's different than the way you're going to call other matches. Obviously, I'm 225 pounds.
Right.
These girls are a buck 20, a buck 40, somewhere in there, some of them. You know, Haley Hatcher was a big girl. She was like a buck 70. You're not going to let them just competitively fight back with you and overcome you.
Right, because it wouldn't be realistic. If you're trying to keep a sense of realism.
No, yeah.
If she hits you, it's not going to be the same kind of force if you hit
her. You're going to physically dominate. And then you're going to slowly but surely start to slip on your own banana peels.
Okay.
And then when you finally start giving them openings, you're going to let them capitalize. And it's all up to the timing, the selling, the execution, the way you're using things, the certain moves you're doing, the way you're going to bump for them. When you start bumping for them, when they start taking you off of your feet, the way that you're doing it, you know, that's what's going to make people interested. Anybody could go out there and just have these guy-girl matches. They do them all the time. But there's a reason why most of the people usually say that mine are the best. It's because I don't call them like I'm just going to call a match with another guy. I kind of just take a little extra special attention to realizing, like, well, I'm not just going to let you beat me up. I'm going to have to slip on my own banana peels for you to get over on me. I don't think about wrestling matches when I think about calling matches with girls. I think about, like, Freddy Krueger.
Okay.
You know, I think about, like, Freddy Krueger. I think about, like, the way he would chase the chicks around. And the way that they would always kind of like get one up on him when he just have them, then they'd slip out somehow in that like girly type of way, and then come up on him,
right.
And then he'd start bumping around and selling huge and being ridiculous. You know, it's theater. It's not just wrestling. It's physical theater. You know.
Do you think that's what makes you different when it comes to being in a gender match?
Maybe, I guess.
I mean, I was thinking more like a Shikara intergender match or something like that. They were like physically equal, like it's something never made sense about that to me when I watch it, and like that shouldn't be. You shouldn't be physically equal because you're just not.
Well, that's like the same thing with intergender matches with the PWG. You'll watch a match between, like, you know, Adam Cole and Candice LeRae, and it'll be like you're watching a match between two guys, but one of them isn't a guy.
Hey, but you know what? Look at it like this. We're talking about all these different types of matches. You know, one's better than the other, one's this and that. Hey, man, it's all just wrestling.
Yeah, it's all the same.
It's all just wrestling.
But, like, let's say, like, if you had a male and female in an MMA situation, right?
Uh-huh.
Obviously, they're not going to be equal.
I mean, dude, I've seen girls beat up dudes before.
No, I mean, it happens, but, like, if you take, like, a top, like, a Ronda Rousey, and you throw her against fucking Chael Sonnen, it's not going to be an equal fight.
Yeah, but
I mean,
don't you see? It's like, but that's what they're trying to make people believe right now with this Ronda Rousey, is that she could beat anybody. It's all a fucking work. Let's be realistic here. There's going to be some chick who's going to come along who's going to fuck that girl up. But they don't want that. They want to keep her protected.
She's money.
Yeah, because she's money. Maybe they'll even put her against a guy that they know she could beat, you know? But, I mean, I don't know, man. I think, honestly, when it comes to wrestling girls, there needs to be careful storytelling taking place when you execute these matches. Some people want to adhere to that, and then some people don't. Obviously, my formula seems to work. It's because look at the attention I've gotten because of intergender wrestling, you know. Sure. And I'm not just sitting here trying to toot my own horn or sound like an asshole, but it's just, you know, the proof is there for everybody to see. I mean, I could make you believe that I'm really trying to kill this girl, but I'm really just very much taking care of her, you know.
I mean, your whole job is to protect you know who you're working with. Yeah. You're not going out there.
We're making these girls look really good.
No,
and that's the problem.
And to your credit, yeah, you have to, because you don't want her to make look like a fucking just sack of shit.
Yeah.
You're just kicking the shit out of the whole match, because that doesn't make you look good.
I mean, every time I've ever wrestled a girl and it's come off just without a hitch, and it's always awesome. You know, I always get my greatest pleasure from watching them make their exit, or I get my greatest pleasure from watching everybody pay their respects to the girl. To wow, you know, that was amazing,
right?
You know, because that's what it's all about. I'm not here to make myself look good. I'm here to make you look good, so I'll look even better. Right. You know, that's the whole point of it, and that's what so many people just don't
understand.
Yeah.
Because I've seen like the what Veda Scott and Gregory Irons shit, and they had a fucking war. You know, and that's kind of the thing. You have to be able to accept that it's not a guy beating the fuck out of a woman. It's two wrestlers having a fucking match.
Yeah, at the end of the
story, I think that's what people have a problem differentiating.
At the end of the day, this is 2015. Things are not going to be as, you know, it's just the same as they were 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Everything's going to change, man. That's what life's all about, evolution. These old timers who wanted a rank on it, I'm sorry, guys. Like, I love your wrestling world more than I love my wrestling world. If I had it my way, I'd be a wrestler in the late 80s and early 90s. That would be my dream. But it just isn't like that anymore. And for business purposes, we got to roll with the punches. I'm not a mark for anything. I hate wrestling. I mean, I don't hate it, but I certainly don't watch it. I don't follow the WWE. I don't really watch any current television wrestling product at all. I don't follow anything at all. I don't even watch Japanese wrestling or what's currently going on over there. I just do what I do. You know, I live through wrestling, through my eyes. I watch the wrestling on the shows that I'm on. You know, I watch my friends. I watch the people that I work with. I appreciate things as they come to me, but I'm not a mark for anything anymore. You know, my wrestling world is gone, long gone. And anybody who has opinions, you know, that are based on that period, because that's when they were, you know, superstars, or that's when they made money, or that's when they existed, that's fine. But they need to understand, and I needed to understand this too, because I was stuck in a time zone that does not exist anymore for a while, and I couldn't accept that the business had changed so much. I wanted things to be a certain way, and I realized they're just not going to be that way. You know, this is 2015. We got to roll with the punches, and you have to do business or any way you can. You know, I don't have the same opportunities and the same situations that guys had 15 years ago in the indies. You know, it's a totally different ball game now. Success is defined so differently than it was then.
I mean, what are your goals at this point? I mean, like, you know, you had a Ring of Honor match not that long ago.
I mean, I'd like to continue working with Ring of Honor. I definitely still want to wrestle in Japan. To be honest with you, the Japanese wrestling is different right now too. It's also taken a hit in the negative department. And there just doesn't seem like there's that many places to go as there was back in the day where you could go over.
You know, there was like 30 different companies at one point over there.
But
so,
the thing is that there was good ones. And it just doesn't seem like there's really good ones like how there used to be in numbers. It just seems like there's just one player in town with the New Japan for wrestling and all this stuff. And that's cool, but this point in my career where I'm almost redefining what my goals are, because if you remember when I was 15, 16 years old, all I ever wanted to do was everything that I'm doing now.
Right.
I wanted to be like a top indie wrestler. I wanted to wrestle the way I do now. I wanted to be who I am now. And I have nothing but happiness in my life, because I sit back and I realize sometimes, damn, I'm doing everything I said I was going to do, and I'm doing everything I wanted to do, and I am who I wanted to be. And now it's almost like, well, you got to this point. Where do you go next? You know, I think too many people get into wrestling and they expect things, and they have these grand ideas of what they're going to do and who they're going to be, and they set themselves up with so many expectations. Wrestling is not the business to make expectations, because things could change, you know, in the snap of a finger, you know, like that. It could be over.
Yeah.
Hey, there is no guarantees at all. Nothing is entitled to you. Nobody owes you shit. You got to go out and take it day by day by day. And I'm just, you know, I'm just going as a, getting everything happening. Everything happens as it comes, man. I do have some short-term goals, long-term goals. I got to be honest with you. I just want to be able to get out of it, say that I enjoyed myself, and then find my successes, you know, and be stable. I want to be financially stable in life. It's not even about wrestling. It's about life.
Right.
You know, that's it.
Like when you, right before you, like your last JP run, you were, with Mox and then Sammy right before they got signed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, now it, look at Ambrose is one of the bigger stars on WTV, and I mean, after almost what 2 years, Sammy finally debuted on NXT recently.
Yeah.
I mean, do you see yourself ever being in that kind of place, or would you not even be interested?
I mean, if the business is right, if it's right for my life at that moment when the time came, but it's nothing that I sit home and dream about on a daily basis. You know, I never wanted to wrestle for the WWE. I know that sounds crazy to some people, but it really wasn't my dream. It wasn't my dream. It wasn't a main goal of mine. It was such a, but the thing is also this, back then wrestling for the WWF, it was like such a pipe dream. It didn't seem realistic. Nothing was as open as it is now. It wasn't like we all knew how you get there. Who do you talk to? You get this tryout. You do this. You do that. Honestly, it doesn't seem like it's that difficult for a lot of people to get
jobs. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you came up with two guys that you were working with right before they got signed.
I mean, those two individuals are talented. It seems like the WWE will hire anybody these days. Everybody's getting a job for this, and that. You know, you realize a lot of it just has to do with politics. Back then, you just didn't know. It just seemed like the WWF. That's crazy, man. You can never wrestle there. That's wild. How could you ever get to WWF? And it's like, but like I said, you know, I didn't also think at 27 years old I'd be doing what I do now. So now you gotta like almost kind of think to yourself, well, what do I do now? Do I try to get to WWE? Is that what I need to do now? Is that what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I selling myself short by not trying? You know, there's so many things you gotta go through. And I don't sit there with this, you know, goal in mind, thinking to myself, it's like, oh, I gotta get to WWE, man. If I don't get to WWE, I'm gonna be so depressed. Fuck, I love WWE. I want to be there. I don't even watch the fucking television show. I haven't watched it since 2002. I have no interest. You know, if I was to go there, it solely would be because the business was right on my end and their end, and they were willing to do business, and we were gonna work together. End of story. I'm a professional wrestler. That's what I do. I'm just not a mark anymore, you know, in that regard. I'm a mark for, you know, my WWF Hasbro toys and, you know, watching Ric Flair and having, you know, I love wrestling. I love wrestling, but whatever they're producing now,
isn't wrestling.
It's not that it isn't wrestling. It's wrestling. It's whatever wrestling is in 2015, but, you know, like I said, it's just business. If I was going to work there, it's a job, man. I do a job. You pay me to do a job, I'll show up and do business, and I'll try to do my job as best as I possibly can. But from a mark standpoint, it's like, no, I don't really have any dreams of wrestling for the WWE.
I mean, how do you capitalize in your current situation now with what's going on?
You're looking at it, man. I mean,
just taking regular bookings.
I don't have a
nothing,
plan. Yeah, just yeah, rocking and rolling, whatever, man. I'm letting it all up. Just happen naturally, and it's just something that things you have to understand, man. On this level of the business, things happen organically, and when things happen organically, you just kind of roll with it, and then you just take it as it comes. And if you have a deep knowledge of wrestling and you're just so seasoned in understanding it because you're a student of the game and you've watched these guys execute these angles and these storylines and these situations over the years. It just gives you so much substance to work off of to create your own ideas. You know, I've got promoters hitting me up all over the place that are booking me now months in advance and telling me that they have all these ideas that they want to do and this and that, and they're like so into it, and they're like, oh, I love this, and we're going to do this with this girl, and I'm like, well, we're not going to cheapen the whole situation and kind of downplay the severity of what happened.
Is it that everyone's trying to get you in fucking intergender matches now? Is that
no,
you don't want to become that guy where you're strictly
booked into that? It's not that serious. Okay. It's just a matter of just saying, like, you know, this is something that's going to be like a little cherry on top of my character for a little while, and I'm going to roll with it, and I'm going to make it happen in a classy way. I'm not going to be overbearing about it, you know? It's because obviously I'm so much more than just a guy who gave the girl a chair shot and a power bomb.
Right.
You know, I'm a professional wrestler. I have wrestling matches. I'm not just this guy who just beats up girls.
Right. You don't want to be typecast as that that being your thing.
No,
you
know? I don't have a 50-second video isn't going to define Chris Dickinson as an athlete and as a professional wrestler. It's just not going to happen.
Oh, that's good. At least, I mean, if it helps you sell a couple t-shirts on top of that, who cares, right?
Oh, well, that's the nature of professional wrestling. It's still a carnival, man. It's still a circus, you know? I used to believe that wrestling was real. I used to think that it could have integrity. I used to really want to uphold so much, you know, for it. I used to feel so strongly about it. I had such a connection with it. And then you just realize, man, you start getting up there and you start getting up there. It's a business. It's a business, and you gotta adapt to it, or you gotta die. End of story. You know, you want to make it in wrestling, you got to accept that there's gonna be things that you don't want to do, that maybe you're not that into. But hey, man, I gotta make money. This is a big chunk of my income right now. A lot of people maybe don't know how much some of us get paid, and there's all different levels to it in the indies. But you know, right now, I could honestly admit to you, thank God, you know, I'm fortunate enough to make some decent money from what I would consider to be decent money off of professional wrestling. So, you know, you got to do what's best for that. It's because I'm not, you know, 17 years old anymore.
Right.
I don't have like the support of like my parents like I did when I was a kid. You know, I got to take care of myself. So, you know, I have to do what I have to do in order to advance financially as well as professionally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have a nice following in the gay community.
Yeah, the gay
they support you.
The gay fans are awesome, man. I mean,
they buy your tights.
Listen, man, professional wrestling is a business completely. There's so many gay undertones and overtones all involved in the entire business. It's not even funny. It's just the way it is. I mean, it's a very sexually charged business, and there's so many, you know, underlying lacings of homosexuality in everything that we do. It's just the way it is.
With everything we talk about, I think where we get our fucking listeners from.
Right. Yeah, no, because I always find it like, I know the females in the biz always sell their fucking used gear and shit. And then when I saw you do it the first time, you were selling your fucking your used tights, and I was like,
I mean, if somebody, there's a market for that. If somebody hits me up and they're saying, hey, can I buy your trunks? How much are they? $350, man. You want to buy my trunks? Cool. Yeah, cool. Absolutely. Do you want to buy my trunks? That's cool, man. Whatever you do with them, I don't care. It's not weird to me. You know? I mean, and
it's not gay. It's wrestling.
As far as customs wrestlings and all that goes, I mean, one of the companies I work for that does customs has videos of Triple H doing customs for the same company back in the 90s before he was even in WWE.
I mean, I'd love to see, though.
I would, too.
I mean, it's not gay stuff. It's not like we're making out or we're naked or anything like that. It's simply just wrestling.
It's just, yeah.
It's just wrestling.
Because there was the infamous Seth Rollins one, and it's like him landing in a guy's crotch face first, and they kind of, you know, oh, kind yeah. of the 69,
he wrestles
69
the,
positions.
He wrestles for
shit.
One of the same
yeah.
companies I wrestle for. It's called BG East. Yeah, he was in BG East. He did stuff there. Kenny Omega, Prince Devitt. I mean, all guys that have been under contract. People think that this stuff does things to, like, hurt your reputation, and it does absolutely nothing. You know?
I was, you know, it's funny about the you just brought up Kenny Omega. There's that video of him and wrestling like the little girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And like that goes viral. And obviously, you know, we all know it's fucking fake and it's work and this and that. But like, does that help? Works. I mean, it's obviously Japan's a weird fucking place to begin with.
Yeah, totally different like culture altogether.
So you know, they have them fucking wrestling and selling for blow up dolls and shit. But like, when something like comes out, I mean, does that ever cross your path and like kind of you feel like maybe that hurts the business in a way in its own weird way.
Dude, I mean, dude, have you ever seen Kenny Omega actually wrestle
before? Oh, I absolutely. Yeah, I mean, fucking unbelievable. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
There's but like, but does that? I'm saying,
and he's an open homosexual. Yeah, he's a gay dude, and he's awesome.
But I'm saying, does that stuff like that devalue what you do in any way?
No, man. I mean, I can't.
No, there's a place for everything like that in professional wrestling.
Yeah,
I feel.
Yeah, man. Dude, that's the thing, man. You know, there's so many. There's always going to be those guys that are going to say, "Oh my God, these guys are killing the business." But hey, man, I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you, and like I said, this is something I had to learn to accept. Wrestling's fake. You have to try to find new ways to blur the lines of reality and make people believe. And that's my job, and that's what I want to do, and that's what I set out to do when I started getting deeper into the independent wrestling scene. And I said to myself, you know what? I got all these workers who are really afraid to work me. They're scared. They're intimidated by me. I don't know why.
Is it because you work the workers now? Is that what it is?
I never
become?
Intended to work the workers. It's just, you know, when you're bigger, you're imposing, you're quiet, you know, guys, then you get in the ring, you start hitting hard, you start, you know, if you guys get, it's just, the workers are the biggest marks of all, you know? You start to realize, man, if that's like the reputation I have, or that's that stuff that goes around, I said, hey, that's something you got to run with, you know? Because if the workers are going to believe you, then the fans are going to believe you. And I just, I was so impressed with Brian Pillman. You know, I was so impressed with Brian Pillman and the work that he did in completely revolutionizing wrestling. I mean, I believe, honestly, in my opinion, he was in a league of his own, almost solely responsible for tons of the, you know, where wrestling went as far as the attitude era is concerned, as far as the realism in wrestling. Brian Pillman was like a pioneer. And, you know, in a time period when everybody knows it's fake and everybody just is accepting and understanding of that, there has to be things that you could do to make these people believe that, wait a minute, well, I know that that's fake, but that guy over there, like, he's really unhappy. He's pissed off, and he doesn't like that other guy. That's the art of wrestling, and people just seem to have forgotten it, or they're too lazy to act into trying to execute it, you know?
I guess that kind of brings us full circle, because now this Saturday, March 21st, you're facing Loki.
Yeah, yeah,
they finally got your the dream match as it more or less is.
I guess I've
15 years in the making.
I wanted to wrestle Loki since I was a little kid.
Yeah, that's a match. Like, I remember when you guys first had the first confrontation in JPW back in like 08, right? 08, 09.
Yeah.
So this is pretty, you know, like you said,
7 years in the making. This one, since that first confrontation.
Yeah, I mean, are you looking forward to it as I don't even say as a worker, as a fan, like, this is like that thing that you kind of, as a kid, you wanted.
Yeah, you gotta think, man. Loki has wrestled all over the world in every company that I would have ever wanted to wrestle for, against guys that I could have only dreamed of working. And these are situations that you go into it and you learn so much from this guy. You know, he's so talented and so well traveled and well seasoned. You know, you look forward to it in so many respects. It's almost not like a. You know, I've wrestled with guys that have been my favorite wrestlers before. All this last year, I wrestled guys that were so inspirational to me and influential to me. You know, I could name names, but Loki was a big one. And, you know, I'm looking forward to just taking it to him. You know, and I love proving myself against guys that are well-respected and, you know, thought highly of. I love proving myself against guys like that, and I love outworking them and just trying my best to outshine them, because that's just what I do. That's why I'm there. You know, I'm there to try my best to be number one. If you ain't trying to be number one, then you're not trying hard enough. You know, there's always going to be guys that want to go and they just want to, like, have a good time, or they don't really want to give 100%, but that's not me. I always want to give 100%. And Loki's one of those dudes. He's a natural competitor. He's obviously a great athlete. And I'm just looking forward to being able to share the ring with somebody who really cares about professional wrestling as much as I do. And when I say professional wrestling, I really stress the term professional, not exactly just sports entertainment.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I did love the fact that on the fucking poster, like, your placement, like, among the top talent they have in there is, like, pretty prominent. You have, it's like Samoa Joe, Chris Hero, Loki, and then, like, you know, you're right there in the same fucking league,
man,
with them.
I mean, I worked for that for a long time. Jersey All Pro Wrestling was my home promotion where I started. That was the only company I dreamt of working for them ever since I was, like, 14 years old. And now to say that I'm, you know, one of the top guys working one of the other top guys on a huge show and their comeback run. And
that's the co-main event. That's like right under, right?
I think we're the main event, probably. We're probably
really?
Event. I mean, yeah. Nice. What else is going to be the main event?
I don't know. I don't even know. I mean, I know Samoa Joe's on the show. So
Samoa Joe and MVP versus Teddy Hart and Chris Hero.
So maybe that.
Teddy Hart.
A good friend, Teddy
Hart. I can't wait to kick his
ass. We'll be there, so it's going to be good.
You guys are going?
Oh, yeah, we'll be there.
We'll absolutely be there. They're bringing the crew.
Man.
Me, Khalil, all.
Oh, everybody's coming, huh?
Phil.
Wow.
It's going to be
Filthy
a,
Phil. Oh, this is great.
It's going to be a homecoming.
Pressure's on, man.
Yeah, you got your hometown boys on
the
crew.
I'm going to beat the shit out of Loki.
It's going to be great, and we're looking forward to it.
It's going
to
be great.
But, I mean, what else do you got? Anything else coming up you want to plug?
I got a lot of things coming up. This is going to be a busy weekend, actually. Impact Championship Wrestling. It's another company that was so revolutionary back in the start of indie wrestling. The start of the boom era, 2001. They're having a show tomorrow night I'm on in Queens at the Elks Lodge. I'm in a four-way with AR Fox, Jigsaw, and Azrael. He's actually returning to wrestling, too. I'm going to kick all their asses. Now, on Sunday, I'm with a company I work for, XWA in Rhode Island. They're a pretty cool company. I'm wrestling a new younger guy up there, getting my hands on some new blood. So all you New England fans that you're, you know, so familiar with me because you see me every month in all the different companies up there, come out to XWA. It's going to be at Cranston, Rhode Island. It's going to be a pretty good show. They always have awesome shows. I love the vendors. I buy all my wrestling figures and, you know, have a good time. But I'm super busy, man. I'm going to be going up to Canada a lot the next couple months. You know, just talking to different companies. Always got surprises coming up. Don't want to give away too much, but you know, I'm very busy the next couple months. Probably gonna be going out to California again. Looking forward to that.
Oh yeah, Hood Slam, right?
Yeah, Hood Slam's pretty awesome.
How was that? I mean, the what I've seen of them is it's pretty interesting. It's different.
I mean, just watch my match there. It was unbelievable.
It's a very different environment from what I've
seen
before.
Huge audience, completely engaged in everything that's going on. I mean, they want to cheer for good guys. They want to boo bad guys. It's awesome. You know, they're really, really fun crowd. I had a great time there, and I loved it. It was absolutely awesome. I loved it. You know, got a lot of things going on, man. Wrestling, you should follow me on Twitter. I kind of just post about random stuff. I don't follow anything. I don't really use it. I just go on it when I'm bored. At Dirty Dickinson, you got that one's always easy. That's where you find usually the most information about what's going on with me, what kind of merchandise that I'm releasing or Team Pazuz is releasing, updated promos, videos, news, all that stuff, personal, you know, rants, bullshit. That's pretty much it. I'm not really big into the social media thing. I keep it pretty simple because I feel everybody else whores themselves out. I don't really need to do that. Other people could do that for me. Yeah, man, wrestling's pretty fucking cool. I think indie wrestling is definitely going through some sort of a boom period, and I'm very glad to be at the forefront of that. I'm very proud of what I'm doing right now with Team Pazuzu. I think that's something that really needs to be mentioned. All the members of Team Pazuzu are all really budding stars in their own right.
Yeah, I should have asked this before. Where the fuck did that come from?
Pazuzu?
No, I mean, I know what Pazuzu is, but like, where did that whole idea come from to use that as
obviously,
moniker?
Me and Jaka. You know, we've been together for a while. The Pazuzu thing, it comes from, obviously, from The Exorcist, from my love for bands like Morbid Angel. Morbid Angel was a big influence in using Pazuzu in my shtick. And once I started dropping the Pazuzu name in some of my rants and promos, people started catching on to it. And then I started hitting moves, and I hit like a deadlift powerbomb in this one match. And the announcer goes, "Oh, maybe that was a Pazuzu bomb." And I was like, "Oh, that sounded awesome. Maybe I'll use that for something. I'll find a way to integrate that." And then the Pazuzu thing, everybody started catching on to saying that. It's just a fun word to say. And then, you know, me and Tyson and Pinky, we kind of all just agreed to put together this whole thing. And then we took EYFBO under our wing as kind of like the young guns. We want to really elevate them and bring them up to speed. It's because they're so humble. They work hard. They're very deserving. And, you know, we wanted to kind of like help them get more exposure. So we put together this unit of bringing back like kind of like what the Hit Squad was. Between, like, you know, the Hit Squad, Low-Key, Homicide, you know, that whole crew of guys, we wanted to kind of bring back a crew of New York indie wrestling to kind of try and bring up the area again and bring prominence to the area again. And now it's actually, I'm starting to, the ideas that we came up with a year and a half, 2 years ago, they're actually starting to come to fruition. And you're seeing it with these companies starting to pop up, and they're all, I think the business is getting better over here, and it's so impressive. It's like, you know, for a while, New York, North Jersey, indie wrestling was dead. Now you got Jersey All Pro Wrestling's back, JCW's back, ICW's back. You got, you know, companies running shows, and T-Pazuzu's everywhere. We're all over the Northeast. We're all over Canada. I mean, we're getting booked everywhere right now. The whole idea is just...
It's a good branding to
it's
have.
It's on fire. That was the idea, you know? Five is stronger than one. If it's five of us all supporting the same cause, then, you know, how could we be less strong if it was just individual, you know? And it's real. We're all real, really legitimate good friends in real life, obviously. Jocka is my best friend. He's like my brother. Yeah, I'm closer to him than I am with my brother. I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. I've known the guy since I'm 7 years old. We've been friends for 20 years. We grew up together. Jesus. You know, we lived the same dream together. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, so we got him. We got the Pinkster, and the Pinkster has been one of my best friends in the business since like 2010. You know, we got close, and we always had an idea of doing something together. And then we just kind of, Mike Drastic and Angel Ortiz. Mike Drastic, he was from Staten Island. He actually was one of Magic's last students when Magic was teaching at a small wrestling school here on Staten Island, that FCW place. And, you know, there was like no hope in that. And, you know, nothing really was coming out of it. But he was there, and he was a big fan of him. And he was so respectful and so humble and so just like thankful for everything. And I said, man, this guy, he went out and then he created himself and then started the tag team with Funky Monkey. And I said, damn, these kids got good. So, you know, they still were asking me questions. How do we get this? How do we get that? They're always asking me, always so humble, saying, we got to finally put these guys on. We got to put together a crew of like ruthless New York indie wrestlers and kind of like just really hard sell this gimmick. It's because New York indie wrestling, it needs to come back. There needs to be, you know, people need to remember that this was where it was at, that there was no bigger than Low-Key, the Hit Squad, and Homicide. Like, that was it. And that's what I want again. I want people to understand, it's like, New York is the place for wrestling. You know, it is no bigger than here. And that's definitely part of Team Pazuzu's mission.
Does it make you happy to see that the Pazuzu bomb has become like a term thanks to World Star Hip Hop?
Oh, absolutely. Are you fucking... I mean, you could call it whatever you want, from that fucking loser jabroni who did the move before me or whatever, the border toss or whatever.
Oh, Hernandez.
That douchebag. Dude, I hope it eats him alive every time he sees that video, because that move is mine forever. And you know what? Scott Hall told me himself, he was like, I'm totally cool with you using that, man, putting a little twist on it. I remember I was like chilling with Scott Hall. He was like, yeah, man, why don't you just do it, wait a couple seconds before you do it, then drop the bomb. I'm like, dude, I mean, dude, hey, man, fuck it, bro. Too sweet, brother.
Well, Chris, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, we really appreciate it.
I love you guys. I've known you guys for years. Brett, you're one of my best friends, dude. Come on, I love you guys.
Yeah, we'd love to have you on again. Maybe
it's actually nice to do this shit with people.
Discuss some other shit for next time you're on.
I was telling him the first time when we were talking about trying to get you on, there's literally so much we could talk about.
You guys just don't talk about wrestling?
No, we talk about a lot of sociopolitical shit too.
Sociopolitical stuff.
Before you got here, we had a whole
show about feminism. And feminism.
You guys have a lot of viewers?
Yeah, we got a lot of downloads.
Excuse me, listeners.
We do pretty well.
But, I'm a star. I'm a big, bright, shining star. Suck that cock.
I think.
Lie still, bitch, or I'll punch you in the fucking face.
I think I know how this show's going out tonight. Anyway, so you know, everybody who's listening, thanks to, you know, Chris plugging this shit. Listen to us every week. Go to us on twoangryguys.com to get to the Facebook. Two Angry Guys on Twitter.
Which nobody follows.
Yeah, Twitter kind of sucks.
Yeah, it's kind of dead.
I'm not going to follow people. I'm just not going to do it. I don't give a fuck, you know? I feel like I have to follow more people in order for people to follow me. I just don't care.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. Questions, comments, yeah. Facebook, email address.
Yeah, but, you know, give us a shout outside of our wrestling shit. We actually spend a lot of time on other shit besides wrestling. So, you know, if that interests you, keep listening. If not, go fuck yourselves. But, you know, until then, I guess we'll be back next week with another episode.
And you could suck me the fuck off.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I'm going to let the dirty daddy do his deeds on me. So until then, good night, everybody.
See you later, everybody.
Come on, come on, come on, come on. Love me. tomorrow. All day, all night, you feel my heat. Feel my heat.
I think we should repeat that again.
Feel my heat.
Feel my heat. Yeah, it's definitely cool. Let's lay it down. Nick?
You want to lay it down?
Are we rolling on the rehearsal?